To write his book, Walking the Bible, author Bruce Feiler journeyed around the Middle East to explore the places described in the Testaments. It was a 10,000-mile trek that took him to the Red Sea, Mount Sinai, Jericho, but politics blocked him from the Garden of Eden and Babylon and Ur. After the fall of Saddam Hussein, Feiler was finally able to walk in what was known in ancient times as Mesopotamia, the land between two rivers. Bruce Feiler's experiences in Iraq are the cover story of this weekend's Parade magazine, and he joins us now by phone from CNN studios in New York. And good to have you back on Talk of the Nation, Bruce.
Thank you, Neil. Always great to be with you.
And, of course, we want to hear from all of you as well. If you have questions about Iraq's biblical and archaeological past, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or email us, TOTN, at NPR.org. And, Bruce, after the fall of Saddam Hussein, obviously Iraq is not, as we hear about in the news every day, not the safest place in the world to take an archaeological tour.
Well, as you said, Neil, I've been trying to go to these places for years. I wanted to go for Walking the Bible. I wanted to go for my book on Abraham, to go where Abraham was born. And if you think, I mean, it's been interesting over the last year. When Saddam fell a year ago, it seemed, I remember all participating in these conversations last summer about how there would be tourist plans taking all of us to Iraq within the year. And then it slowly deteriorated and deteriorated and deteriorated. And it felt like that door that had flung open was about to close. And so I figure I needed to go now.
And part of that tourist equipment is a ceramic body armor.
Well, I mean, that's the least of it, it turns out. I had to get the body armor, the helmet, the satellite phones. I mean, getting into Iraq now is incredibly complicated because there's three overland routes. You can go up through Kuwait, in through Jordan, or down through Turkey. We managed to get on a CPA flight, a Coalition Provision Authority flight, from Kuwait into Baghdad, and these flights, they're very rare, and they make a corkscrew landing, banking the wings of the plane back and forth in order to avoid shoulder-launched missiles. And then when you get there, you put the body armor on, the helmet on, and you get in one of these convoys, and you go racing, I mean, almost 100 miles an hour through the streets, trying to get to a compound that's finally safe.
But getting back to what you were there for, and of course we'll hear more of your stories about modern-day Iraq as well, but we tend to think, all of us learn about, Bible classes very early in life, or at least many of us do, and these places take on a mythical aspect. I mean, was there a Garden of Eden?
Well, to answer just the broader question first, yes, this is Mesopotamia, which is the land between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. This is the cradle of civilization. It's the birthplace of the Bible. The Garden of Eden was supposed to be here. The Bible tells us the Tower of Babel. The first alphabet was written here. The day was first carved into 24 hours here. And the essential purpose of my journey was to try to figure out, if we look by looking at ancient Iraq, can we learn anything about modern Iraq? And to deal with the Garden of Eden, since you bring it up right away, the Tigris and Euphrates are basically this great double highway of antiquity. They begin up in Turkey, they go right straight through Iraq, and they pour into the Persian Gulf. The Bible tells us that the Garden of Eden was located at the confluence of four rivers. Two are the Tigris and Euphrates, two, we don't know where they were. The Tigris and Euphrates today, they meet in this town of Korna, about an hour north of Basra, where the suicide bombs were just a few hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, I mean, that road, it is extremely scary. You can only be on it a few hours a day. And this town is desperately poor. And the two rivers meet there, and alongside it is a park. And it's called the Garden of Eden. It has got two living olive trees and one dead olive tree, and it's covered in pavement. I mean, it's true what Joni Mitchell says, they paved paradise. And it was very scary to get there because you could only go in the middle of the day. And we got there, these kids, we were surrounded. I was traveling with the photographer Gwendolyn Cates. And really for the first time, I felt full of hope and there was this life and you just got the sense of excitement. Minutes later, these thugs showed up, flashed weapons. Our guides came over. We got to go. And we were thrust into our car. And within 15 minutes, we were having to flee in fear. And I think it was a reminder that there really is no Eden here right now.
Ur, the birthplace of Abraham, the Bible tells us, not too far away.
It's a couple hours away near Nasiriyah, which is a very dusty town. And for me, this was really a personal highlight because, as you know, and you and I have discussed before, I've spent a couple of years talking about Abraham, his role as the shared ancestor of Jews, Christians, and Muslims. And to finally get here, and Ur was the capital of ancient Sumer, and the centerpiece of this is a ziggurat, one of these stepped ancient pyramids. And we got there, and it's a little bit safe there because it's alongside an army, an air base. I threw off my body armor, climbed 122 steps to the top of this ziggurat, and there we met these soldiers from the 607 Military Police Brigade, and they had been stationed for the last year, and this captain told me he would get up in the morning, he'd be tired, he wouldn't be happy to be there. He'd look over and he'd see the ziggurat, and he would say, you know, maybe I'm here for a purpose, and I better go see the chaplain and get me involved in a devotional. And the chaplain of this brigade, his name is Steve Munson, he told me this wonderful story about how much his soldiers came to appreciate that Abraham is the shared ancestor of all three faiths, and this is where the interfaith idea began here in Iraq. And he held this baptism for a number of different Christian denominations in an ammo crate. They filled it with water. They baptized these men as a soldier played Amazing Grace on a saxophone. And at the end, they started looking. They hadn't had a shower in a couple of weeks, and they said, you know, it's a shame to waste this water. So they all stripped off their clothes and then had this, as he called it, rub-a-dub-dub, three men in the tub bath right there at the base of Abraham's home.
As you mentioned, of course, Iraq is the cradle of civilization, Mesopotamia. It is the origin of many stories, not just biblical stories, but the epic of Gilgamesh, among many others, going back to Sumerian times.
Right.
One of the great stories and tragic stories emerging after, in the immediate aftermath of the war in Iraq, was the looting of so many of Iraq's antiquities. And I know that you were able to stop in, not just, and we'll get to the museum in Baghdad in a few minutes, but at Diggs antiquities sites in that part of Iraq and further along the road to Baghdad. What's going on there?
Well, basically, Neil, there are 10,000 sites, and the largest of the sites, Ur, Babylon, Nineveh, Nimrod, they are now protected. The real tragedy is occurring at the ones that are not protected, including many which have not been excavated yet at all. I went with John Russell, who is a scholar from Boston, who is the chief archaeologist of the CPA, and we took a tour of Babylon, and he's really charged with monitoring this, and he talked about getting in a helicopter and flying over these sites, and he said they look like Swiss cheese from above, because still today, and Paul Bremer, in my conversation with him, same thing, he confirmed, still today the looting is ongoing. He said it looks like Swiss cheese. They are digging into the ground and pulling objects out willy-nilly. And so I said, well, what really has been lost? And he said each of these sites could have rewritten the history books hundreds of times over, and now they're lost. And I said, well, what questions will we never know the answers to? He said the great thing about archaeology is that as you're doing excavations, you come upon questions you never even thought of and will never even know what questions to ask. And then I said to this man, he's a very bookish man, incredibly earnest, putting his life in great peril to save these sites. I said one of the great lines in the Bible is, by the rivers of Babylon, we sat and wept, referring to the Israelites. And he said, you can't go to these sites today and look at the destruction and not weep.
We're speaking with Bruce Feiler. He's the author of Walking the Bible, among other books, and he's the author as well of the cover story in this weekend's upcoming edition of Parade magazine, which tells the story of his travels to the part of the Bible he was not able to walk for political reasons when he wrote his book. And again, that's going to be, I guess, in your Sunday paper this weekend. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is from NPR News. As you continue to see these architectural sites, these archaeological sites, I mean, there's a famous golden harp that was once pulled from the ground. I guess that was Ur, wasn't it?
That indeed was an Ur. That was in 1922 when Leonard Woolley was there. And there's actually I'm not sure what you'd call him, a caretaker who lives on the site today, whose grandfather actually dug with Woolley in the 1920s at Ur. And he was showing me around. Again, this is Abraham's birthplace. I've been trying to come in here for years, and this man was incredibly passionate about it. He didn't have a lot of teeth. He was clearly not and it's a difficult place to live, southern Iraq right now. And I said, if you could have met one person in all the ancient Sumerian civilization, whom would you most want to meet? And he said he'd like to meet the person who invented writing because of cuneiform, the early scribblings, chiselings into clay first happened here in ancient Sumer. So I said, well, what would you want to tell this person? He said, anybody today, when we sit down and write, we owe a debt to you. We are all Iraqis because of you. I think that in some ways really is the lesson that so many people who are visiting these sites, and I personally have taken away, that this is the birthplace of civilization. It really is a part of all of our lives. And I've been to a lot of Middle Eastern countries, as you know, Neil, but there's something about going to Iraq. In some ways, it was more dangerous than it seems on television, but in so many ways, it seemed much more like home because of all these familiar places, Ur, Babylon, Nimrod, Nineveh, and these are places we learn about in third grade, we read about in the Bible. And really, I think that this is a part of the world that belongs to all of us, and I hope, even amidst the fighting, that we remember that.
Let's get a caller on the line. Sam is with us from Newark, New Jersey.
Hi, and I appreciate the opportunity to be part of the conversation. I was wondering whether there is any indication that the repression of Saddam may have perhaps repressed or removed the appreciation by the Iraqi people for their archaeological history, their biblical history, and which may be part of if there is a lack of appreciation of it, and if that's perhaps fueling the destruction of these sites.
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I would say that my answer to that would be mixed. On the one hand, I would say, yes, there in general is a lack of education in Iraq, and therefore you can say that that's one of the reasons that there's a lot of looting. But Saddam's situation was very much like the Shah. And in ancient Iran, the Shah could not wipe out ancient Iranian history. In fact, he tried to link himself to it. And it's the same thing with Saddam. If you go to if you go to Babylon and you go to Hatra up in the Kurdish areas and you go to Nimrod, what Saddam did was carve his initials thousands and thousands of times over on these monuments. And essentially he was trying to say, I am the heir to the great ancient civilizations of Iraq. I am the new Nebuchadnezzar. In Babylon, over Nebuchadnezzar's ruins, Nebuchadnezzar being the emperor of the 6th century, Saddam built his own palace right over Nebuchadnezzar's palace. So he was trying essentially to link himself with the past more than he was trying to distance himself from it.
Do the people have an appreciation for that, or was that a delusion on his part?
Well, I think that clearly that's proven to be a delusion on his part, and what they're doing now is having to go through and scrape off all these thousands of insignias that he carved on the stones. But I think that the broader problem about appreciation for archaeology has less to do, I would say, with miseducation and more to do with the lack of education.
Thanks for the call, Sam.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. I did promise to ask what has happened to the antiquities that were stored in the museum in Baghdad that suffered such terrible circumstances in the immediate aftermath of the liberation.
I did go to the museum and spend an afternoon with the director. We got a little bit of misinformation last year. There are 170,000 objects in the museum. It turns out only 14,000 were stolen, and 5,000 have been recovered. So now there's a gap of about 9,000, and these sites are beginning to show up in black markets around New York, London, and Paris. But it was interesting being in the museum. There is change going on. They've gotten some money from private donors and a little bit of money from the U.S. government. I was there. They're putting on a new fence. They just got new computers and new display cases. And there, in fact, is legislation now pending in Washington to stiffen the penalties for trading in illegal Iraqi antiquities. And they're hoping to open the museum in a couple of years.
And a lot of that looting, it seemed like an inside job.
Well, that was by far the most striking thing. I mean, to go from place to place with the display cases, with the director, there's a lot of stuff still there. I mean, including this 8-foot code of Hammurabi, which is the first legal code, of course, from Hammurabi in Babylon. It's one of the most famous objects found in ancient Iraq. It's still in the museum. And the reason is because it's a replica. And the people who went through knew exactly which objects were real and which objects were replicas, and they only took the real objects. So it's very clear that there was some random looting, but really the greatest damage was done by people who knew what they were doing.
Bruce Feiler is author of Walking the Bible, A Journey by Land Through the Five Books of Moses. His article on biblical history of Iraq appears in this weekend's Parade magazine. He was with us by phone from CNN Studios in New York. Thanks as always, Bruce.
Great talk to you, Neil.
In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.